Know me, I'm Barbara Feldman. I am chairman of the committee of Te Whareroa, and along with my very wonderful team, we try and run the admin side of the show. It's wonderful to see so many people who've come tonight. I think in all the history of the show, which goes back, what, a dozen or so years, 15 years maybe, we've never had a series of 14 shear in on one topic. We've tried different things before, but this is very much a historical evening. And we're very grateful to Rabbi Danny Kadar, who's going to give the course, who has put together, I think you'll agree from all the notifications you've seen so far, a very interesting collection of shear in. We have a website, teferadeal.com, and you can download the leaflet, although I know there's many of them around tonight, from the website. And also we're hoping to be recording every shear so that if you have to miss any, because 40 is a lot to come to without any other events going on in your lives, that you'll be able to download or just listen to any shear that you miss on the website. Before I hand over to Rabbi Danny, just to welcome you to the shul. The shul itself underwent about 5 years ago a total facelift. We've now made this wonderful space, and not only are we using it for a shul, as you will see around you, we have created an amazing library. We have categorized everything in the library now. There's learning that goes on pretty much every day, and we're just about to launch next week. We have a new security system. Anybody wants to come in various times to learn here and so on can be registered with their fingerprint and get access into the building with their fingerprint. Rabbi Danny, again, is in charge of that. We have services every day, if anybody's interested. Every Shabbos, every day. Shachris, Mincha, and Arvit. And, of course, on a Saturday, we have a very nice kiddush and lunch here. So, I don't think there's anything else to say about the shul. Without further ado, I'd like to hand over to Rabbi Danny to start the course. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Simon. Thank you. So, good evening, everyone. And thank you very much, Barbara, for those nice and warm words of introduction. And welcome to both our regular members and also those who are coming for the first time here. To the Ferity, I hope you enjoy your time here and hope to see you a lot over the next few months here at this place. And as Barbara mentioned, this is a growing Beit HaKnesset with, you know, wonderful books and wonderful facilities and different programs, and we will hope you'll be able to come and take part in it, not just in this series, but in future ones to come, and different shurim and different events that are held at this synagogue regularly. I'd like to begin by thanking a number of people. Firstly, the rabbi of the synagogue, Rabbi Zaken, for backing this project. Secondly, to Dr. Kahen, Dr. Elisha, who has in many ways been the brainchild of this initiative and different ideas towards it. And I'd like to thank him very much for his encouragement and support. And of course, to the Tiferet El Committee and to each and every one of you coming this evening to join us in this wonderful program. To come and learn Hilchot Shabbat, it's special. You know, coming out in the evening is never easy. To come out and learn and commit to coming on a regular basis is something which is praiseworthy. And Chazak Baruch to each and every one of you for coming along. And I hope that you'll enjoy it. And we will all together learn a lot about Shabbat and strengthen our adherence of Shabbat and our appreciation of this very special day. I just want to begin the first third, I think, of this lecture tonight with some words of introduction about what Shabbat is and, you know, our approach to Shabbat and why Shabbat is so relevant today in 2018. So it's very interesting. We have a concept which we often hear, you know, hear people saying or asking about someone. Is someone Shomer Shabbat? You hear that sometimes. People ask, is he or she Shomer Shabbat? Okay, and it's very interesting that we don't have that with other mitzvot. We have 630 mitzvot, we know. Yeah, and we don't hear somebody, is he shomer sha'at nez? does he keep Shabbat? Yeah, but Shomer Shabbat stands out as the one which people ask about, people are interested to know about, and that defines a person's religious level, whether he or she is Shomer Shabbat or not. Why is this so? So, we know the Torah in two places tells us about the Ten Commandments. Okay, in Parashat Yitro, in the book of Shemot, and in Parashat Vayitchanan, in the book of Devarim, and they're almost identical. The two sets of Ten Commandments are almost identical. However, there are some very small nuances between the two sets of Ten Commandments. But there is one huge difference between the two sets of commandments, which Hachamim straight away picked out. In Parashat Yitro, the first set of Ten Commandments, there the Torah talks about keeping Shabbat. It says, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat Likadsho. Okay? Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. What does Zachor mean? Zachor means to remember. Okay? Zachor et Yom HaShabbat. So when the Torah talks about the first set of commandments, it talks about Zachor et Yom HaShabbat, remember Shabbat. Okay? When it talks about the second set of commandments, it talks about Shamor et Yom HaShabbat, God. So that's a big difference. The rest of the difference in Ten Commandments are very nuanced. But this is the major difference. In the first set, it's Zachor, remember? The second set, Shamor. And Chachamim taught us, Zachor and Shamor b'dibur ham ne'emru. They were both said together in the same phrase. Okay? Something very difficult for us human beings to comprehend. But Zachor and Shamor were said together at the same time. And what this means is there are two equally important components of Shabbat. Both Zachor, remembering, and Shabbat, guarding. What's the difference between these two? Zachor is all the positive aspects of Shabbat. Zachor means a person to honor Shabbat, to have good food on Shabbat, to wear nice clothes on Shabbat, to come to synagogue on Shabbat, to spend more time with his family, to spend more time appreciating HaKadosh Baruch Hu, appreciating Torah, appreciating Shabbat. That's the positive. The good food, etc. Then there's the Shamor. The Shamor is the guarding, it's the not doing. It's the holding back from, the negative. Positive and the negative. And Bedibur Echad Ne'emru, they were said together, they were said in one sentence. What that means is that they are equally important. Okay? And we know there are lots of Jews, who are Zochrei Shabbat. There are lots of Jews who remember Shabbat, which means they will do Kiddush on a Friday night, they will do Havdalah perhaps on after Shabbat, they will even have the meals of Shabbat, they will come to synagogue on Shabbat. But they may not necessarily be Shomrei Shabbat. They may not be guarding Shabbat, they may not be withholding from those things that a person is not meant to do on Shabbat. And so when we refer to someone as a Shomer Shabbat, we mean not only is he a Zocher Shabbat, not only does he have that positive aspect of Shabbat, you know, that engagement and that relationship with Shabbat, that he treats it as a different day from the rest of the week, but also that he's a Shomer Shabbat, that he marks this day differently, not just in his food and his dress, but also in his precise details of his or her conduct. Okay? And that's a Shomer Shabbat. But they are both equally important. Which means, you cannot just be a Zocher Shabbat, you cannot just come to synagogue, do kiddush, have meals, have a good time, but not keep the details of Shabbat. But neither can you just be a Shomer Shabbat. You can't just be a Shomer Shabbat. You can't just keep the details of Shabbat without appreciating the background, the beauty, and the positive aspects and elements of Shabbat. I'll give you a simple analogy. You go to an art museum, you see a beautiful painting. Okay, and you're breathtaken by it, and you look back at it, and you know, staring at it and appreciating it, and you're so taken aback by this painting that you start to fixate yourself on each and every brushstroke of this painting. If you get too fixated on one part of the painting, and you start coming too near to the painting, you lose the beauty of the painting, right? You're losing the beauty of it. And so you have to stand back. You can't focus on the details too much. If you focus on the details too much of the painting, you lose the beauty, that transcending painting in front of you. But at the same time, to appreciate the painting, a person has to have a good eye for detail. Right? You need to be able to see the painting, see what is beautiful, and to be able to see from afar the details. But the painting without the details isn't anything. Right? If you don't have each and every one of those brushstrokes, then that painting loses its beauty. And so you need the balance between, on the one hand, you need to be able to have that whole picture in front of you, that whole painting, that beauty. But on the other hand, the details. How many times do we send an email, okay, and it bounces back on us, and we look back at the address, and we see, instead of putting a full stop or a hyphen, or vice versa, right, one tiny dot, which people, maybe like, you know, Daniel, know, I can explain to you the science behind that. But for simple people like me, we've got no idea why. But you put the right dot in there, instead of the full stop, instead of the hyphen, it's sent to Australia. That detail is so important. Right? The detail is important. But at the same time, you need to have with it the holistic, overarching beauty of Shabbat. And that's the Zachor. The overarching beauty of Shabbat is the Zachor, and the details of Shabbat is the Shamor. And you need both. You can't focus too much on the details. You need to have the details, but you must also have that transcending aspect of Shabbat. That's the Zachor and the Shamor b'dibur echad nehemru. They said together. Why is Shabbat so important? Why is it so critical to our belief and to our religion? So three main reasons. Two of them the Torah tells us explicitly. The first reason the Torah tells us is because Shabbat reminds us of the 7 days of creation. God created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh day. And by us similarly imitating God, by working during the 6 days and resting on the seventh day, we are affirming our belief that Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and there is a source behind this universe. That's number one, that's the basic understanding, that's what the Torah tells us explicitly. In another place the Torah tells us the reason for keeping Shabbat is to remember Egypt. What's keeping Shabbat got to do with Egypt? Why every Friday night when we say Kiddush we talk about Zecher Litzad Mitzrayim, a reminder of Egypt? Okay, so Rambam and Morev Nevuchim tells us that in Egypt, even though we had back-breaking, very difficult work, but on the seventh day, somehow Paro agreed to give us a break. And so by keeping Shabbat and resting on the seventh day, we affirm our belief in the whole narrative of Shemot and the Exodus of Egypt. And what that means from a theological perspective is that not only that God exists, that we affirm by keeping Shabbat and we said that there is a creator to the world, but more importantly, there is a creator of the world who is involved in the world. Because Egypt demonstrated that there's a God who's actually involved. The miracles and the interaction with Paro and with Moshe, there is a God who didn't just create the world and left it to run randomly according to nature. There is a God who's involved in the world, and that's Egypt. And that's why Tefillin is so important, and so on and so forth. So, firstly is the affirmation of our belief of a God. Secondly, affirmation of a belief in a God who is constantly involved, who is a Mashgiach in this world. But there's a third point here. And if you look in the Torah, you'll find something very interesting. Whenever the Torah talks about Shabbat, it prefaces a sentence. It says, keep Shabbat. The Torah talks about Shabbat a few places in the Torah. Whenever it talks about it, it says, keep Shabbat. Then before that, a few words before that, always says, Sheshet yamim ta'aseh melachtecha. 6 days do your work. Right? And it seems to me this emphasis, that you can only really keep Shabbat if you work on 6 days. Now, we've never heard any rabbi get up and say that you have to work all 6 days, and you can only really keep Shabbat if you work the entire week, right? But it's interesting that the Torah on a regular basis says, Sheshet yamim ta'aseh melachtecha. 6 days do work. And then it says, keep Shabbat. I think the idea here is that the Torah is contrasting Shabbat to the 6 days. The rest of the week, the main part of our lives, is about doing. It's about ta'aseh melachtecha. It's about being active. Shabbat is about being. 6 days, do. Be active. Seventh day, just be. We forget that we are called human beings. We're not called human doings. That's a big mistake that we make in life, and we define ourselves by what we do. First question people ask each other is, what do you do for a living? What do you? It's who are you? What's your identity? Right? Not what do. We're human beings, not human doings. And Shabbat reminds us the contrast between the 6 days and the seventh day. The 6 days, we do. Sheshet amim ta'aseh melachtecha. The seventh day, lanuach. Just relax. Just sit back and be. Stop trying to do all the time. Rosh Hashanah, I spoke in our synagogue membly about the three aspects of Musaf. You know, the main prayer of Rosh Hashanah is the Musaf prayer. And it has three distinct elements to it. It's called the Malchuyot, the Zichronot, and the Shofarot. Malchuyot is kingdomship, Zichronot are memories, and Shofarot is blowing of the Shofar. And I explain these three with the analogy of driving a car. Okay, if you're driving a car, the first thing you need to have when if you have a safe journey is that the windscreen is clear. Okay, it can't be blocked by anything. And so Malchuyot is kingdomship, it's the vision. We talk about in the Tefillah about our vision of humanity, our vision of the world. That's the vision, it's in front of us. That's Malchuyot. Being of here, we set our vision. The second aspect is Zichronot. That is analogous to a rear view mirror, or the mirrors on the sides. You can be driving ahead, you can have a clear windscreen mirror. If you can't see behind you, then, or on your sides, you're going to get in trouble as well. You're not going to have a safe journey. And so that vision, which we have ahead of us, must be grounded and founded upon our Mesorah, upon our tradition. Okay? A vision for the future based on the past. Malchuyot and Zichronot. But then thirdly, perhaps most importantly, is Shofarot. Rosh Hashanah is defined by the Shofar. Because Shofarot is, continuing the analogy of the journey, the Shofar is the speed signs or the traffic lights. It's someone beeping the horn. Stop. Now, you know, sometimes you're driving down the motorway and you see those blue signs. Tiredness can kill, take a break. And you say, oh, you know, I'll get to the next sign. Right? That's Shofarot. That's the blow of the Shofar. The horn. Right? You need all three to have a safe journey in life. You need to have the vision ahead. You need to have that. The vision needs to be based on the past. That's our Mesorah, our tradition. Okay, and our Minhagim, our customs. But that has to come with elements of the year of the Shofar, introspection. Of stopping and reassessing, am I on track? Is this vision actually working out? Right? And that's the Shofar. And the best time during the year, you know, we have Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, that's the special time of the year. But we're now a month away from Yom Kippur. Yeah? Just a month ago we were standing and praying the entire day. A month away. What do we have left of that, of Yom Kippur? Shabbat is Me'en Yom Kippur. It's a type of Yom Kippur Shabbat. Because Shabbat allows us to stop, to have introspection, and to reflect on the previous week, and to build for the coming week. Okay? And that's the element of the Shofar of Shabbat. So we got these three dimensions of Shabbat. The vision ahead, based on the past, and a reminder on a regular basis, and Shabbat is the best time for that. As I said before, Shabbat allows us just to be. Not to prepare for the coming week, not to reflect, not meant to be sad in the past week, meant to just be in the present, enjoy the present. That's the beauty of Shabbat. And this is why the Sfarim teach us that actually Shabbat gives meaning to the entire week. And we're used to viewing Shabbat as being the culmination of the week. So we know 6 days, and then the seventh day. But there's actually a whole different way in viewing Shabbat. The Kabbalists teach that Shabbat gives meaning to the rest of the week, continuing this theme. Because Shabbat can be viewed actually as the middle of the week, not the end of the week. If you take a 3D unit, the vast majority of 3D units have, at least this is from the Maharal, okay, from Behudalah of Prague, from the 16th century. If you look at most 3D units, they all have six signs. Six, yeah? And these six pieces, these six sides, only have meaning when you have a center. So if you're building a cube, you're building a cupboard, you need six pieces, six planks, okay? If you don't have a center where you're going to put that cupboard, then those six planks are meaningless. They're just going to be lying around. When do these six random planks come and give meaning? When actually you take and you decide, I'm going to build it here, put my center here, and then I build around it six pieces. I have now my cupboard. From the outside, what's this scene? It's the cupboard which is the important thing. But actually, in essence, it's the center, the invisible center, which gives meaning to the whole structure. And so, explains the Maharal that Shabbat is the same. Shabbat is the seventh day, it's the day in the middle. So not just the end of a six-day process, it's actually, the Kabbalists explain, it's the middle of the week. Why? Because the week begins from a certain perspective on Tuesday night. 3 days before tonight, beginning Tuesday night, preparing ourselves for Shabbat. Shabbat's 3 days away. Then we have Shabbat, the middle of the week, and then we cool down from Shabbat, the 3 days after, and then we begin again the cycle, Tuesday night, and so on and so forth. And Shabbat is actually, in many sense of the word, the middle of the week, which gives meaning to the rest of the week. And as I explained, how does that give meaning to the week? Because it allows a person to reflect, introspection, to look back on the previous week and build on the coming week. And this is why it's so important that we are not just Zocher Shabbat, but we are also Shomrei Shabbat. Yeah, we don't just remember Shabbat with the positive, like I said, you know, the Kiddush and the good things of Shabbat, that's the generalistic picture of Shabbat, but also we have the details. And therefore, the purpose of these lectures of the next 14 talks is that we focus on the details, okay? At the same time, trying to understand the reasons behind the halakhot, the understanding behind them, and how they can actually enhance and improve our relationship with Shabbat. And the reason I decided to dedicate these shiurim to Shabbat is because I feel that, you know, these are the questions which are most commonly asked, and this comes up every week. Yeah, you know, Chagim come once a year, other questions come up on random occasions. Shabbat has to come every week. There's one thing is guaranteed, apart from having to pay your taxes, is that, and dying, is that also Shabbat's going to be on the seventh day, right? And we're going to have Shabbat. And so Shabbat is so complex, it's so intricate, and just to conclude my introduction with one more idea, an insight from the Maharal, we find that before the Torah was given in Parshat Yitro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Am Yisrael a few mitzvot to prepare them. This was in the place called Marah. Okay, give him three main mitzvot. What are these three mitzvot? Firstly is Parah Aduma, the mitzvah of the red heifer. Secondly is Dinim, judicial laws, intricate laws of adjudication between parties. And thirdly, Shabbat. Why specifically these three? So the idea is as follows. These are the three different elements and aspects of Shabbat. Parah Aduma, the red heifer, that's the aspect of Shabbat of the of depth, of philosophy. The philosophy of Judaism. The philosophy of our Torah. As we know, Parah Aduma is the deepest mitzvah, which even Shlomo HaMelech could not comprehend. Amok, amok, mim, tse'enut. So deep to him. That's the philosophical aspect of our religion. Then you have Dinim. Dinim mean, as I said, adjudicating. That you need to have a deep analytical brain. You need to be able to take something, dissect it, and analyze it. Right? And then, even if you're a philosophical person and you're an analytical person, but if you spend your whole life analyzing one or two books, one or two sentences, then you're going to be ignorant because there's so much there to study. You also, at the same time, need to have bikiyut. You need to be able to have breadth of knowledge. You need to be able to take things and just learn through them. And that's what Shabbat is. Because Shabbat is so many details, there's so much to it, right? And so many facts to it, more than so many other areas of Torah, so much to learn. And therefore God gave us these three different mitzvot. You have the philosophical aspect, the analytical aspect, and thirdly, the aspect of our Torah, which is having to learn and learn and learn. That's why Shabbat is so important. There is so much to study and so much to learn. And it would be a fallacy to come here and believe that over the next 14 lectures you're going to become masters in Shabbat. You know, I want to put it blunt and be frank. We're going to learn a lot. But Shabbat is something which we have to learn our whole lives. It's something which we have to be engaged with regularly and constantly, because there is so much to learn. The purpose of these 14 shiurim is at least to give us musagim, to give us concepts. Is that at least you know an area where I know there's an issue here. I know there's an idea here. I don't know the exact details, but I know there's something to ask. As opposed to someone who has absolutely no clue of even the concept, right? And that's the purpose of these 14 shiurim, to give us a background and to cover every aspect of Shabbat as much as we can, and that we know each element of Shabbat, and to know when there is a potential issue during our observance of Shabbat for the rest of our lives. There's a famous piece from Rabbi Yonatan Eibeshitz, who lived about 300 years ago, and he said that it's almost impossible for a person to be Shomer Shabbat if he's not regularly learning the halacha. Precisely because of what we said, because there is so much detail to it. There's so much to know. Yes, and as I said at the beginning, we mustn't get bogged down with the detail too much. If we focus and fixate on some details, then we lose the aura of Shabbat, but we do need the details. Okay? And therefore, that's why it's so important that we learn and that we're consistent, and we view this course as the beginning of going further and further in our understanding and appreciation of Shabbat. The halachot which we will give will be based mainly on the Pesachim of Chacham Avodah Yosef, Zichrono Levracha. His fifth yahrzeit was actually just a few days ago. And he gave us Sfaradim so much in all his books, all the Torah which he left for us. And so mainly we'll be addressing his Pesachim, but we will mention here and there the Pesach for the Ashkenazim, the laws for the Ashkenazim, and also for those with a more mystical a trend who like to follow the Ben Ish Chai, etc. We'll also mention briefly when the Kabbalah argues with the Halakha, and there are different perspectives. But we will mainly focus on Chacham Avodah Yosef for this course. Okay, so that concludes our introduction, and let's now get right into it. I'll be happy at the end of each year to take questions, at the end. But we have a lot to get through, as you can see, as Barbara said at the beginning. Please feel free to take the booklets. There are a number of them lying around. The booklets have a detailed outline of each and every shiur. If you can't get one here, then feel free to download one on the Tiferet Yael website. So today we're going to discuss mainly four things today. Okay, we're going to discuss four in the remaining 35 minutes that we have. We're going to discuss, firstly, doing work on Friday afternoon. Secondly, eating out on Friday afternoon. Thirdly, hadlakat nerot, lighting candles before Shabbat. That's me number four. Thirdly is going to be actually traveling on Friday afternoon. Traveling. And fourthly, we'll conclude with hadlakat nerot, lighting of candles. So let's begin with number one. So number one is a person allowed to do work on Friday afternoon? So Shulchan Aruch is very clear. From Mincha Ketana. Mincha Ketana is approximately 2.5 hours before sunset. Okay, approximately. From that time, a person has to stop working. Not only does he have to stop working, if a person does work, okay, the expression he uses is Enoro Esiman Beracha. He doesn't get any blessings from that work. Very sharp expression. And so what that means is going to be, in practice, that we're all going to have to leave our offices 3.5 hours before Shabbat, not just 2.5, yeah, to get home for 2.5 hours before Shabbat. And that would be quite difficult. It's very difficult enough in the winter taking off, getting home on time for Shabbat. But how do we reconcile this idea that you're meant to stop working 2.5 hours for Shabbat? Hachamim wanted us to be prepared for Shabbat, and not just to, come straight home and jump into Shabbat, but rather to prepare ourselves. Having said that, there are four heterim, there are four reasons why this halakha is not so applicable, and why in most aspects a person is allowed to continue working on Friday afternoon until very close to Shabbat. Okay? The first reason is because the type of melacha, the type of work which is prohibited, is only work which is arduous and work which is recognizable that's forbidden. So, for example, plumbing, weaving, these types of things, writing, etc. But a person just to buy and sell, it's called pragmatia and halakha, just buying and selling, stock markets or a shop which is open, buying and selling, that's fine. Yeah, only heavy and serious melacha was part of the Hachamim's institution. A person should leave the field in those days, from the agricultural times, you leave the field and you start making your way back. That's the heavy duty type of melacha. But selling, buying and selling, these types of stuff which you don't need to put too much, at least manual effort into, these type of things you can continue until close to Shabbat. That's point number one. Okay, this is why all the shops are open. Why all the kosher shops are open all the way through till Shabbat. They can theoretically stay open. Of course, a shop shouldn't stay open too close to Shabbat so that the people working there, if they're Jewish, can get home, and people don't come for Shabbat, end up making their way back home on Shabbat, etc. But generally speaking, 10, 20 minutes, half an hour for Shabbat, it's fine for a shop to be open up until. Because, as we said, buying and selling is fine. Secondly, is that this halakha only applies if a person is doing his own work. If a person is employed, okay, then he's not duty bound to actually take a break on Friday afternoon. He may continue working all the way through till Shabbat. If a person is employed. Only if a person is self-employed, and, as we said earlier, it's heavy work, then a person has to stop. Thirdly, if a person is doing anything for Shabbat itself. So, for example, he's an electrician who's fixing electricity for Shabbat at home, that's fine. That's for Shabbat. A person is, you know, weaving a garment, or dry cleaning a garment, or having a haircut for Shabbat itself, that's fine. It's for Shabbat. And fourthly, if it's davar ha'aved, if it's something which a person will lose business if he doesn't do it on Friday afternoon, then he may continue to do it even on Friday afternoon. Which means, if you think about it, very rare does this halakha apply. Because you're always going to find one of these four get-outs. Number one is, if it's a simple type of work. Secondly, is if you're employed to someone else and you're fine to continue. Thirdly, if it's for Shabbat itself, you can work, even up till Shabbat itself. And fourthly, is that if you're going to have suffer financial loss, you won't be able to do that work after Shabbat, that you're not going to get that client back again, then you may continue to work on Friday afternoon. A great example of this, where it's prohibited to do work, is a sofer, a scribe, okay, who works for himself. Okay, he's writing the Sefer Torah to be completed in 6 months' time. Right? So, this is a proper melacha he's writing. Secondly, he is self-employed, okay? Third, he's not doing it for Shabbat. And fourth, he's not going to lose any money doing so. It's a project which he's got 12 months to complete, writing the Sefer Torah, writing the Mitzvah. So in such a case, the Sofer, such type of people, who are totally self-employed and are running their own business, and you know they've nothing to do with Shabbat itself, their work, then they need to stop approximately 2.5 hours before Shabbat every Friday afternoon. Okay. Of course, the person should make sure that whatever work he does, it should come into Shabbat with the right frame of mind. Like we say, don't just land into Shabbat. A person comes with some sort of preparation, and some sort of hachana, to be able to enjoy the spirit of Shabbat. That's point number one. Number two is traveling on Friday. Is a person allowed to travel on Friday? So interestingly, Shulchan Aruch, based on the Gemara, says that a person is not allowed to travel more than approximately a journey of 3.5 hours. Not 3.5 hours before Shabbat, a journey of 3.5 hours, you don't have to travel on a Friday. Okay? Which means you wouldn't be able to travel to Gateshead, for example. Manchester, perhaps you could, depends how fast you drive, perhaps you could get there in 3.5 hours. Yeah? And what car you have as well. Generally speaking, some places you wouldn't be able to go to. However, you have to understand the reason for this. The people misunderstand the reason for this halakha. The reason for this halakha isn't because we're concerned that you're going to get stuck on the motorway. Because Hachamim expected you to stop your car on the side and go to the local hotel and spend Shabbat there. That's not the problem. The problem is they were worried that we're not going to have enough food to eat. And they were worried that if a person can travel on Shabbat too much, he'll end up going to a place where he arrives just before Shabbat and won't have food ready. And therefore, the halakha is, if a person is notifying the place where he is traveling to, that he intends to arrive before Shabbat, and they are going to be responsible for his or her food, that's fine to travel even after Shabbat itself. The problem is the food. This halakha, they're not meant to travel before Shabbat, okay, on a Friday, is got to do with you having enough food on Shabbat. Chachamim were very concerned that we eat well on Shabbat, okay? And they wanted to make sure that we get there in time, that we have enough time to sit and to enjoy Shabbat. And therefore, as long as a person is coming home from a business trip, for example, and he's coming home, he's traveling on a Friday, that's fine if his wife knows that he's coming back. So she'll make him enough food, yeah, and he won't be hungry on Shabbat. Right? The only situation I could think of where this halakha could be applicable today is, you know, in Israel, you have yeshiva students who just get on a bus. These three boys, I guess, in yeshiva, used to get on a bus, any bus they find, and find their place, wherever the bus will take them, and land in that place on Friday afternoon, and find the place to stay for Shabbat. Right? This is what some people do there. You know, get on any bus, and Baruch Hashem, Jews are very hospitable, and they would find themselves a place to go. So according to what we've learned, to travel such a journey on Shabbat, if it's a long one, so for example, to travel from Jerusalem to Tzfat, yeah, which is a long journey, right? Not knowing, and going to a place where the host or hostess is not expecting you may be problematic. Okay? Nonetheless, today, the poskim writes, people always cook extra for Shabbat, and already this halakha has been neglected. The Magen Avraham from already 400 years writes that people don't adhere to this anymore. And so, strictly speaking, a person may travel on Shabbat, a person may travel before Shabbat, okay? As long as he should try to make sure the place where he's going has sufficient fruit for him to be able to enjoy Shabbat. Of course, a person has to make sure they travel on Shabbat. And so a person should have put himself in a situation where he's going to be tempted to continue driving another 10 minutes into Shabbat itself. Okay, some people know that he can't drive anymore. Some people will stop the car on the hard shoulder and spend the next 25 hours on the hard shoulder. That's what you're going to have to do. Okay? But some people may be tempted to drive another 10-20 minutes. Don't put yourself in that situation if you feel that you may not be able to withstand that test. But generally speaking, a person may travel on Shabbat, but he should be before Shabbat, but he should obviously be vigilant that he leaves enough time to always get home and to get to his destination, ample time to prepare for Shabbat.
Rabbi, can you relax? Makolet?
Makolet are normally... What?
Assuming like you're not going to someone's house.
Right.
It's like an empty
and it'll be open.
You've got Makolet next door.
Right. But yeah, it's the same idea. Okay, so the third halakha, which is actually very applicable still today, is the halakha that, again, Chachamim wanted us to be able to enjoy Shabbat itself. And not to enjoy Shabbat because we've enjoyed Friday afternoon too much. And therefore they said, any meal which a person doesn't regularly have during the week, he shouldn't have on a Friday. So, some people eating out at a restaurant is it's a weekly occasion. And so for them it's not a souda sheinah ragil ba. It's not a souda which he's not accustomed to. So that's fine to go and eat out on a Friday afternoon, because there's nothing special about that meal. But someone only goes out to a restaurant at special occasions and has a nice souda, a nice meal. Then Chachamim said that an entire Friday, a person should not indulge in such a meal. Why? To keep appetite for Shabbat itself. Entire Friday, a souda which a person is not accustomed to eat during the rest of the week, he's not allowed to have on a Friday. However, this only applies when a person washes for the meal. So if you're eating out in a restaurant, having very good food, which you don't normally have during the week, and that's accompanied with a meal which you sit down to, that's the problem. If a person just sitting down and enjoying some good food without actually a souda with bread, that, strictly speaking, is permissible the entire day. However, from about 3 hours from the beginning of the 10th hour of the day, so from the beginning of the 9th hour of the day, from about 3 hours before sunset, a person should start thinking about Shabbat, especially in the winter. Especially in the winter, where Shabbat comes in early, a person should always make sure that he doesn't eat too much on a Friday afternoon, that he ends up coming on Friday night and not being able to enjoy Shabbat. And if I may add, my own personal concern, apart from the concern of not enjoying Shabbat itself, is that person will upset his spouse, who's good food for Shabbat, and you've had a big lunch at home, and you're not able to enjoy the meal which a person has worked hard for. One caveat to this halakha is that if there's a mitzvah, so that mitzvah is permissible the entire day. So for example, a brit milah is a meal which is a lavish meal. It's not one which you regularly have. Nonetheless, it's permissible the entire Friday because precisely it's for a mitzvah. But any meal which a person doesn't regularly have during the rest of the week, and he's sitting down to wash to it, a person shouldn't have such a meal the entire Friday in order to distinguish Shabbat and keep Shabbat different from the rest of the week. Okay. So these are three things which we've discussed which are applicable to Erev Shabbat before Shabbat. So we've said number one is working before Shabbat. We said almost in all situations the person is allowed to continue working till close till Shabbat. Secondly, we've said traveling on Erev Shabbat. Almost in most situations a person can travel on Shabbat, assuming he leaves enough time to arrive before Shabbat. And thirdly, having a meal before Shabbat, as long as the person doesn't wash, he can have even a lavish meal. But if a person's having a lavish meal with washing, a person shouldn't do that on a Friday unless it's going to be for a mitzvah. Now we move on to the final part of the shiur, is Nerot Shabbat, lighting candles for Shabbat. So we have a mitzvah, okay, which is actually debatable. Some even say this is a mitzvah from the Torah, from the Nevi'im at least. Okay, a mitzvah to light Shabbat candles. Okay, it's at the very least a rabbinic mitzvah, but it could even be a mitzvah from the Tanakh, because the Tanakh tells us v'chibadato me'asod derachecha. You mark Shabbat, and some say that marking Shabbat with light is by lighting candles is a fulfillment of this biblical mandate. And Nerot Shabbat is a very important mitzvah, lighting candles, to the extent that the Chachamim tell us in the Gemara that a person, and if you notice, I'm emphasizing a person, and you'll see why soon, a person who is a particular with the Shabbat candles will have children, Talmidei Chachamim. And the commentary is explained very simply, because candles bring light into the world, and Torah brings light into the world. Pasuk in Mishlei, in Proverbs, Shlomo HaMelech says, Ner mitzvah v'Torah or, Torah gives light to the world. Okay, and therefore, when a person lights candles Shabbat in his particular, does it in a precise and correct manner, then he is rewarded with having children who will be also light up the world with light and Torah. Okay, and it's a very special mitzvah, and this is why women have the custom to actually and pray after the Katnirot to the daven for their family, because this is a time where auspicious time for a person to pray. Now, this mitzvah is not unique to women. Okay, this mitzvah is incumbent both on men and on women equally. Just the women come first. Okay, the simple reason is because the Rambam writes, traditional reason, because they're normally at home. Okay, and they'll be able to prepare the candles. That's the reason. Okay, but really, a man can equally light the Shabbat candles. To the extent that the poskim write very clearly, the person sees his wife is delaying to light the candles, so it's a minute or two before Shabbat, and his wife's still in the shower. Okay, the man himself should light the candles without waiting for his wife. Why make his wife light 5 hours after the time on the calendar? Okay, you should light yourself. This, again, this brings out this point, that the Katnirot, lighting of Shabbat candles, is a mitzvah, which actually is both duty-bound of men and women equal. What's the reason for this mitzvah? Why is there a mitzvah to light Shabbat candles? There are two reasons given. One reason given is for Oneg Shabbat. Oneg Shabbat means for a person to enjoy Shabbat. Why? Because when a person can't see his food, he doesn't enjoy Shabbat as much. When a person sees the food he's eating, then he appreciates it more. Yeah? You know, when the lights go out and you're just about eating your food, just by still eating, you don't have that same enjoyment as when you can see what you're eating. Okay, so a person, again, we see over and over again how concerned Hachamim were that we have Onik Shabbat, that we enjoy ourselves, and we have good food and we enjoy our food. Not just that it tastes good, but it looks good as well. Okay? Second reason given is Kavod Shabbat. Kavod Shabbat means the honor of Shabbat, which means that the person needs to have light in the house in order that he doesn't stumble and trip and lose his way in his house over Shabbat. Okay? It's two different reasons. One is to enjoy the food, oneg, enjoyment. Second one is kavod. Person honors Shabbat, he doesn't stumble and trip over on Shabbat. One candle is sufficient. One candle is sufficient. Okay? The minhag, a very old custom, is that we light two candles. As we began the shul this evening, Zachor and Shamor. But, if a woman only has one, and you know, she's going to have to start looking around for the second, and a delay, just light one candle, that's totally fine. Okay? Totally fine. Now, there's a very important concept in Hadakat Nerot, lighting of Shabbat candles, and that is there are two duties in this one mitzvah. The two duties are, there is an obligation upon a home which will be lived in on Shabbat to be lit. And there is also an obligation upon a person himself to light. Two obligations which normally come together. So when a woman lights candles at home, she's fulfilling both obligations. She's fulfilling the obligation the house is now lit, and she's also discharging her own duty, which she does on behalf of the entire family for her husband as well. However, if a person, let's say a husband travels away for Shabbat, his wife stays at home, she lights the candles at home. Okay? She lit the candle at home. So the house is lit, and she's discharged her duty. And she discharges her husband's duty as well. The personal duty of her husband. However, the place where the husband is staying at also needs to be lit as well. And therefore, there is a duty for the man to light Shabbat candles in where he is staying. In the house where he's staying, he has to light Shabbat candles there. Because apart from the personal duty which you have, which your spouse has discharged at home, the home itself has a duty to be lit. Two separate duties. And the same is true the opposite. If a husband's at home for Shabbat and his wife is away, then husband lights at home and he discharges the home duty and his own personal duty for the family. His wife will also have to light where she is to discharge the duty of the house itself. Okay, that's important points. Just because you're away and your spouse is lighting for you at home with the kids and with the family, that doesn't mean that you yourself don't have a duty. You still have a duty to ensure that your house is lit. Okay? Now, a common question which is asked, young couples eat out a lot on Friday night, their parents, etc., and they eating out and coming back to sleep at home. So, where should they light and when should they light? Okay, where should they light and when should they light? So you have two options here. The best, if this is possible, which isn't always, the best option is that you light at home, you go out to eat, and you ensure that when you come home, the candles are still alight. So that you are still benefiting from the candles, because you cannot light candles, make a bracha on them, you don't have any benefit from them. If you light candles before Shabbat begins, then you straight away get in the taxi and go to go to where you're going to eat, then you're not going to have any benefit from the candles which you've lit. You made the bracha on them. You have to have actual benefit from the candles. And so what you can do is light the candles and then go to where you're eating, but you ensure that the candles will continue to last until the time you come back home. And some people are uncomfortable with that, okay? Some people are kind of leaving the candles alight, which can be understandable. And also, this isn't always practical, because sometimes you're leaving the house too early. You're going mid-Friday afternoon to your parents' home, and then you're going to be walking back on Friday night, and it's too early. The time you're leaving your house, it's too early to light Shabbat candles. Right? So that's not always feasible. So the second option, which you have, is the place where you're going to eat, you light there. Okay? The place where you're going to eat, you light there. Which means that you don't light in your own home. Okay? But the place where you're going to eat, you light there on the Shabbat table. Okay? Now this, I don't want to go into too much detail, this can be slightly problematic because according to us Faradim, once a house has already been lit, once you have one Baal Habayit, one Baalat Habayit, one leader of the house who has lit for the family, then a second family can't light there with a blessing because they're not really adding anything to the dinner because there are already candles there, right? So we can't make a bracha on that, most of Faradim, okay? And so that's also not so clear cut. In such a situation, what a woman can do is that she can light in another room. If you light another room which is used, so for example the kitchen, that's fine as well. I can make a bracha there. Okay? So to summarize, a couple who are eating out on Friday night and then coming back home to sleep, they have two options in front of them. One option is that they light at home after the time when you're meant to light. Then they go to where they eat and come back home. But they must ensure the candles will continue to last until they come back home. Alternatively, adding quickly, if they leave after nightfall, which is unlikely, if they leave their home after nightfall and they already had benefit during the first hour of Shabbat, then that's also fine. But generally speaking, you have to make sure that the candles will continue to last until you come back home. Second option is, you don't light at home at all, you're concerned with fire and safety, etc. You light at the place where you're eating, but you must of course get there before Shabbat. You get there before Shabbat, you light, preferably light in another room, and then you can recite a blessing. Lighting in the same room, a person really shouldn't, for Sfaradim, at least Ashkenazim do make, but Sfaradim, we don't make a blessing once someone's ready the candles, since you know, parents are ready the candles and you're not meant to light again. Okay. Three more points, and then we'll take questions. Three more points. A woman who forgot to light, or for that matter, a man, forgot to light Shabbat candles. Overslept into Shabbat. That can happen sometimes. When goes to sleep half an hour for Shabbat and sleep into Shabbat too late to light. Or she forgets. Or she's gone to race and she didn't pack the candles and there's no candles, etc. So, what can she do? What can she do? So, if you've got no light at all, and you're going to be sitting in the dark for the rest of the night, and it's still the time of twilight, okay? Still the time of twilight. Twilight is like the first hour of Shabbat approximately. Then, a person may expressly instruct a non-Jew to switch on the lights, even if it's a filament bulb, you know, that's totally fine. Because any, it's an important principle this, anything which is for Shabbat and it's still ben hashmashot, it's still twilight time, a person may ask a non-Jew expressly to do during that period of time. Okay? So for example, today Shkia is about 6 o'clock, sunset 6 o'clock, night falls about 10 to 7, these 50 minutes are called ben hashmashot, twilight, and if a person forgot to do anything before Shabbat, and he needs it for Shabbat and will be very concerned about it on Shabbat, or if it's a mitzvah, then you may ask expressly a non-Jew to do the thing for you. Okay? So therefore, if she's got no light at home, and it's going to be dark, then she can ask a non-Jew. But it's only in the first period of time, 45 minutes or so, okay, till nightfall. Once that's passed, then it's too late. You can no longer ask a non-Jew to switch on the lights. Now, there is also recorded that a woman is fined, knas, she gets punished. Because she forgot to light the candles, she has to light an extra candle every week for the rest of her life. You know, sometimes you go to these big families and you've got lots of candles there. It's not because the woman has forgotten so many times. Yeah, that's because they light for each child, which, by the way, as Faradi never did. It's not accustomed to as Faradi at all to do. We light 2 candles, 1, 2, or 7. Okay, some even do 10, but each child is a new minhag from the Ashkenazi. But in any case, if you forget to light a candle, to light the candles for Shabbat, then every Shabbat, for the rest of your life, you need to light an extra candle. However, this generally will not be applicable. Okay, breathe a sigh of relief. Because since the Poskim writes, since today we have electricity, the reason why Hachamim wanted to knas you, to give you a punishment, was because, make sure you do it. If you don't want to spend the whole Friday night in darkness, and that's going to be a disaster of a Shabbat, right? But since we anyway have electricity, even if you've got to light the Shabbat candles, at the end of the day, you're not going to be having a terrible Shabbat. You've got the electricity off. You don't have that same aura, eating with the Shabbat candles, but it's fine. You'll survive the Shabbat. It'll be fine. So you don't have to... Only if a woman forgot to light the Shabbat candles, and she also forgot to switch the lights on. Okay? Yeah. She fell asleep until an hour into Shabbat. And her husband comes home knocking on the door, it's really dark outside, and he wakes her up, and they're trying to find each other. Then she's going to have to light every week for the rest of her life an extra candle. Okay. 2 more points. When is the correct time for a woman to recite the blessing of Ladnik Nesh HaShabbat? Now, let's take a quick vote for the woman here. Who says the bracha and then lights the candles? Who says the bracha and then lights the candles? Okay. Who lights the candles and then says the bracha? Okay, fine. So, if we go back to the source of it all, if we were starting from the beginning, okay, the correct procedure would be, as Chacham Avodah, it's very clear, he's very sharp about it, is that you're meant to say the bracha first and then light the candles. Because, kol ha-mitzvot kulan mevarech over la'asi adam. Every you do a mitzvah, you recite the blessing before you perform the mitzvah. You shake the lulav just now, 2 weeks ago, say the bracha first, and you shake it. That's why we always tell you, turn their trog upside down, but don't hold their trog. Why? Because once you've taken them together, you've done the mitzvah. You normally say you can't say the bracha. Well, you shouldn't really say it. You can still say the bracha, but don't put yourself in that situation. But you meant to do the mitzvah, bracha before you do the mitzvah. Okay? And therefore, if you've already lit the candles, how can you say the bracha afterwards? You already done the mitzvah. And therefore, strictly speaking, the correct procedure is say the blessing and then you light the candles. However, the Rama is the authority of what Ashkenazim writes, that actually their custom is that they first light the candles, then say the blessing. Why do they do that? They do the wrong way around, seemingly. Because there is an opinion that when you recite the blessing, you accept Shabbat. A woman who recites the blessing of lighting, she's already accepted Shabbat. If you've already accepted Shabbat, then how can you go and light Shabbat candles? And therefore what they do is they first light the candles and cover their eyes. The reason they're covering their eyes, you can say many mystical ideas, but the simple idea is very simple, is you cover your eyes so that you don't have benefit from the light yet. You say the blessing, as soon as you finish the blessing, you open it, and therefore it's a quasi before the mitzvah. Even though you've already done the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is really lighting the candles, not really seeing the candles. But nevertheless, in order to somewhat fulfill this opinion, what we do what these people do is they light the candles, cover their eyes, they're not getting any benefit from the candles, say the blessing, and then open their eyes, and then it's still considered somewhat before the mitzvah. And that's what the Rama writes for the Ashkenazim to do. Shulchan Aruch seemingly says that you do the bracha first, and then you light the candles. Nonetheless, as most of you put up your hands, the minhag is that many Sfaradim is they do like the Ashkenazim. And this isn't a minhag which has been picked up in London over the last 20 years, the Sfaradim copying the Ashkenazim. This is a very, very old minhag, okay? This is a minhag which the Chida already records, you know, a good 400-year-old minhag, that the Sfaradi women would do this. They would light the candles and then say the bracha. Okay? And therefore, Rabbi Tzion HaMashal gives a very nice psak, and I think this is, Anil Dati, I think this is, you know. If a woman already has a custom, so she knows what her mother's tradition is, and her mother did a certain way, she should continue that way. Yeah? If her mother lit the candles before, and then said the blessing, continue that. But a person who doesn't have a custom, so for example, a person who bar teshuvah, their parents weren't religious, and they don't mean, or a convert for that matter, who's starting new, okay, then he or she should light the candle, should say the blessing first, only then light the candle. If you have an established minhag, continue it. If you don't have an established minhag, then the correct procedure for us, for Adim, is first you say the bracha, only then you light the candles. One final point. Can you do work once you've lit the candles? So commonly what can happen is you light the Shabbat candles and then you remember, wow, I forgot to switch off the lights. I forgot to do this. I forgot to do that. Can you do some sort of melacha, some sort of work after you've already lit the candles of Shabbat? Okay? So, without going into too much detail, the Ashkenazim hold is that once you did the Shabbat candles, you already accepted Shabbat. And therefore you can no longer do any melacha. However, what does help is that tonight, if you make a stipulation, and when you're lighting the Shabbat candles, you clearly say that you intend not to accept Shabbat. Yeah, you say, I'm lighting Shabbat candles now, but I intend not to accept Shabbat. Then you may continue doing work until Shabbat itself. Even though you've lit the candles 20 minutes before Shabbat, you can continue doing work until Shabbat itself. Okay? As Sefaradim, strict halacha is that even the bracha, even lighting the candles, one doesn't accept Shabbat. Okay, one doesn't accept Shabbat, one may continue to do work after lighting the candles until Shabbat itself. Nonetheless, the poskim do write, in order to accommodate all the opinions, the best is that a person makes it tonight, makes a stipulation, yeah, I'm going to light the candles, but I intend to continue doing work. And as I said before, this can be very common where you're lighting candles and you're going to eat out, you're taking a taxi, you're driving there, you're driving to shul, whatever it may be. Okay, so it's good, light the Shabbat candles, and you make it tonight, make a condition that I'm lighting the Shabbat candles, but I do not in any shape or form intend to accept Shabbat. So to summarize tonight's shiur, what we did is at the beginning, we gave introduction, and we explained the two elements of Shabbat, Zachor and Shamor, the positive and the negative, and how they're intertwined, and you need both, you need the details, but you also need the whole picture. We explained the reasons for keeping Shabbat, number one, affirmation of belief in creation of the world, secondly, God's divine providence and involvement in the world. And thirdly, we be on Shabbat, we don't just do. We discussed four main issues. Firstly is work on Friday afternoon. In most situations, the person may work. Secondly, traveling. In most situations, the person may travel on the night of Shabbat. Thirdly, is eating out. We explained, you know, if you're not washing and it's only if you're washing and it's an irregular meal, a person cannot have that any time on a Friday unless it's for a mitzvah. And fourth, we discussed various aspects of the mitzvah of lighting Shabbat candles. We explained the reasons for it, the two different reasons for lighting Shabbat candles. We explained that there are two separate obligations, the obligation upon each and every person and on each and every place. And therefore, if a couple are not together, they have to light in both places. We explained that if a couple are eating out and then making their way back home, then they can either light at home and ensure that the candles continue to light till they come home, or they can light in the place where they're eating as long as they ensure that they light in a separate room. Okay. We said that a woman who forgets to light the candles, if there's electricity in the light, she doesn't have to light an extra candle for the rest of her life. Of course, she should be very careful to always light Shabbat candles on time. As I said before, you know, the person who is consistent and careful with this mitzvah, the Gemara blesses us with Tamidei Hachamim. The best time to say the blessing is you continue your tradition. If you don't have one, then you say the bracha first and then light the candles. And finally is, strictly speaking, for us Sephardim, a person may continue to do work after lighting the Shabbat candles, but nonetheless, it's a good idea when you light the Shabbat candles to say that you don't intend to accept Shabbat, and like that, you may continue to do work after Shabbat, after lighting the candles, until Shabbat begins. Next week, B'ezrat Hashem, we have our second shiur, next session will be on the 23rd of October. We'll divide into three parts. First part will be Kiddush. We'll be discussing the importance of Kiddush, how much you need to drink, etc., making Kiddush on challah, and how much grapes you have to drink, all of that. Secondly, the Shabbat meals, the person is on a diet, doesn't want to eat on Shabbat, etc., the significance of Shabbat meals. And thirdly, Havdalah, different aspects of Havdalah, which will be B'ezrat Hashem discuss next week. Thank you all for coming. I hope you enjoyed it and have a good evening.